is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain. As free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Well, I've been selling my soul, working all day, overtime hours for bullshit pay, so I can sit out here and waste my life away. Drag back home and drown my troubles away. It's a damn shame what the world's gotten to for people like me, people like you. Wish I could just wake up and it not be true, but it is. Oh, it is living in the new world with an whole soul. These rich men know, the rich men, Lord knows it all. Just wanna have total control. Wanna know what you think, wanna know what you do. And they don't think you know, but I know that you do. Cause your dollar ain't shit, and it's taxed to no end. Cause the rich men, know the rich men. I wish politicians would look out for miners, and not just miners on an island somewhere. Lord, we got folks in the street, ain't got nothing to eat, and the whole beast milking welfare. Well, God, if you're 5'3" and you're 300 pounds, taxes ought not to pay for your bags of fudge rounds. Young men are putting themselves 6 feet in the ground, cause all this damn country does is keep on kicking them down. Lord, it's a damn shame what the world's gotten to for people like me, for people like you. Wish I could just wake up and it not be true, but it is. Oh, it is living in the new world with an whole soul. These rich men know, the rich men, Lord knows they all just wanna have total control. Wanna know what you think, wanna know what you do. And they don't think you know, but I know that you do. Cause your dollar ain't shit, and it's taxed to no end. Cause the rich men know the rich men. I've been selling my soul, working all day, overtime hours for bullshit pay.
Thank you, Oliver Anthony. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the story behind the story. I'm your host, Dr. H. Ruott. Yeah, that's rich men north of Richmond, Virginia. Yeah, I'm Kelly. Oliver Anthony and Nellid, and I've been listening to that song over and over for the last month and 2 months. It just is so apropos. So thank you for that, Mr. Oliver Anthony. Welcome to the show tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I've had to take a sabbatical last week. I was down in the southern part of the great United States, down to the border of Mexico. Yeah. Golly, down on some business down there. Had been in a place where I've never really been before. I've always wanted to see that part of the country. Yeah, Las Cruces. Quite an amazing border station down there. I just say that much. And Just doing some work on the El Camino Real, the old Highway of the King that dates back, into the early 17th century. Yeah, what a history. Golly, before this country was even thought about in 1776, the Spanish conquistadores were doing some amazing things to the Native American population out west. Just I'll let it go at that. And so they tried to conquer the Apache nation, but nope, they weren't able to. So we're here, we're back, we're fine, we're in the saddle. It's an incredible time we're living in, ladies and gentlemen. We always keep saying that. And as Oliver Anthony said, golly, until you understand who's pulling the strings here, these rich men north of Richmond, these miscreants, war criminals, crimes against humanity, it's all going on. We are at war, ladies and gentlemen. This is Revolution Radio. This is the story behind the story. We're going to get into this in a big way tonight. Hope you stay with us throughout the next 2 hours. I promise you it'll be well worth the time. Thank you again for your support. If you're on this for the first time, this is an absolutely commercial enterprise, this Revolution Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this station only exists because of donations from listeners like you. So if you can just click the support button, we sure appreciate it. Get out there and again, we need it. Just if a few thousand people give $5, it makes a lot of difference. So please give whatever you can. Ladies and gentlemen, again, I was gone last week. Thank you, Kevin, a.k.a. Major Burdock, for taking the ball and running with you, as you always do. How's life in the Philippine Islands today? It's sunny Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice. And again, as always, the people are always the best. But, always my pleasure, True. We had a great show. I want to thank Ro for jumping in. That was great. I mean, we really enjoy doing that every once in a while, just getting into it, finding some new perspectives on things that, man, what a week, though. What a week since.
Oh, yeah.
A lot has happened, get into it,
True. Oh, for sure. And we've had James has been taking quite a few weeks sabbatical. He's what's new in James' world. Thanks for joining us tonight, Jim.
I've been doing a lot of traveling, Doctor. I was down in Texas too. I was in Del Rio, and I was amazed. Maybe we talk about that later on the show. When you couldn't be online, I was driving back from Texas, and I was in and out of no cell phone area. You know, the Pecos has almost no internet. You think it would be like the middle of America, but Pecos, Texas is like a dead zone. Unbelievable. Well, there's no people there. There's just a bunch of cows and oil wells, but... But it's what about beautiful territory? And you know what? I stayed in the Pecos and I couldn't get on the internet even from the hotel room. And what a great place. If you're ever in Pecos, Texas, the city of Pecos, Texas, stop in the Best Western there. It is like going to a hotel in the 1960s.
Wow.
They have and it will give you a new lease on what America is and what Americans do. They have a diner in there. It's like walking into the 60s. And you know who's sitting down in the diner there? Roughnecks. Men covered in oil.
Wow.
And you know what? There's Indian roughnecks, and there's black roughnecks, and there's Mexican-American roughnecks, and there's white roughnecks, and they're all covered in oil, and they're all sitting around dinner tables in the beautiful Best Western in Pecos, Texas, and they sit down and they say a prayer before they eat, and the food comes out, and it costs like half the price of McDonald's outside of Pecos, Texas. And it gives you a new lease on what being American is. It makes you feel like, yeah, we still are indivisible. And this major news media that's trying to divide us by color and by creed and by religion and by any sort of any way they can divide us and mutilate our children. Those roughnecks in Texas aren't going to put up with that. And I bet you the roughnecks in Oklahoma won't either. So
I met some pretty good roughneck characters, I got to say, down in southern New Mexico.
It was right
by El Paso, actually. It was down right down the border town.
But I bet you that every other blue-collar workers out there are the same way. That's what real Americans are. And I am just sick and tired of people trying to divide me. I don't care if you're a Catholic or a Lutheran or a Pentecostal or a satanic worshiping son of a gun. Whatever you are, if you're an American, you stand up and you be united with the rest of the Americans.
Well, yes, but there's a certain element there that you can't condone. I don't care who you are. When you start messing with little children innocently, no.
Oh yeah, well they can go straight on to hell. And you know what? I bet you those roughnecks would help them go that way.
Yeah, they surely will. Hey, listen, so golly, we ran down the same neck of the woods down there. Golly, you know, have you read the Zane Grey novel West of the Pecos?
I have not, but I have heard the saying. But my grandpa used to have a stack of Zane Grey novels. I think he had every one ever made.
I do. My dad was an avid Zane Grey. In fact, there's a story behind that. I actually, my family actually met Zane Grey when he's out. He actually came on the East Zion area to do some lion hunts in the day when he was at his height of his prowess. So yeah, the family knew, actually my family knew Zane Grey and worked with him a little closely on the lion hunt. So there's a family story there. But West of the Pecos, the story is talking about just what you're saying, the type of people that inhabit. I mean, that is a rough part of the world down in there.
You have to get along with people there, that's for sure. That's like being in like desolate Alaska. You get gas before you enter the Pecos because there's no gas station until you get to Pecos.
Amen.
Okay.
You know, I found something else out that's just kind of in the infiltration there. That down in southern New Mexico, there is a little small bird called Hatch. And as you drive past Hatch and go into Hatch, as we did, we had some people that we had to meet there. This is the pepper capital of the world, raising, you know, so much of these green and red peppers that goes into all of the things we do eat, those canned pepper, Hatch peppers, etc. I didn't know that, but it was cool to see these, you know, hundreds of acres of pepper plants, of course, being harvested and cleaned. But the people, this is an interesting part of this, because in the last, oh golly, 5 or 6 years, according to the people we met there that lived in Hatch, they told me the story of a new type of rattlesnake that's manifesting in that neck of the woods. And they don't understand where it came from or how it mutated. It's called the Mojave Green rattlesnake. It's got a new type of toxic poison that not even antivenom touches. It's now been classified as one of the top 5 venomous bites in the world, right? Only, you know, like right behind the green mamba. In other words, you bite this, the neurotoxins are so powerful, you will be dead within 30 minutes at the outset, maybe 15 minutes.
Does it have a rattle?
It does, but it's a small little rattle that's kind of more like a buzz, you know, like a zzz. And I got to tell you a little funny story. The friend that I drove down there with, we were doing some research on this particular subject and a certain other particular subject. And so we had a guide there, local fellow, his name is Bill, and he's Hispanic and just a wonderfully devout Christian gentleman who, you know, was telling us all about, you know, we had to walk into the brush there in the mesquite area with, I mean, chaps all the way to our knees. Because he says, you don't want to take a chance on getting nailed by one of these little critters. And they're quite prolific. And well, to scan the area, my friend had a drone, right? One of those little new mini drones. And so he was setting it up while our Hispanic friend Bill was not paying attention too much. And doggone it, if my friend didn't start the drone up, and it just, the buzz sound was just like a rattlesnake. They don't really rattle, they just kind of buzz, you know. So imagine a drone taken out with a buzz. Well, this Bill is an older gentleman, and he wasn't moving too fast until that drone took off by his foot. And he moved really fast, I'll tell you what.
Wow.
So
I think,
yeah,
new snakes are proof of dimensional rifts. You were talking about the demons coming from other dimensions, and these dimensional rifts and alternate Earths that exist out there.
Have, well, yeah, where did these things come from? You know, and you look at the etymology of them. The scientists are like, this is weird, because, you know, they're saying they come from the south and come up from Mexico and even down further south into Guatemala. But no, this is not really, you know, they have the sidewinder and other western diamondback rattlesnakes, but this is like a morphing new type of and it was interesting to study this because, you know, they're having trouble with these snakes. They don't lay eggs, and this is unique. I was studying what they were doing. These female snakes actually hatch their young, and they just like give live birth, and that's creepy, crazy.
Well, you know, there's some fish that do that too. The perch have live babies,
and so these little guys, you know, right out of the mama's birth canal, come out, and they're deadly too. I mean, they're only like what, 2 or 3 inches long. But imagine this, as they get even 4 and 5 inches, guess what they like to go? They like to crawl up into pepper plants and hunt for bugs in the pepper plants. So you can imagine how dangerous it's become when people are going to harvest the pepper plants, or do a machine that will come and harvest it. But these little snakes get up in the peppers, and they get a lot of workers have been bitten. They have to wear protective gloves and eyeglasses and all of these little rascals. So, man, so when you open up your hatch pepper can and tin, you know, kind of look closely. Might see a little rattlesnake in that sucker. I don't know. Yeah, there. It's a clear and present danger, guys. But
I do my best to avoid seeing snakes. Okay. I've noticed if I don't see the snake, I don't worry about the snake.
Well, so,
I did have a squad leader one time, and we would go on bivouac from time to time, and he insisted that if you looped a rope around your shelter half, that the snakes wouldn't cross the rope because they didn't like the way the jute and hemp or whatever, jute, I think, felt on their stomach.
I'd heard that too. I don't know if that's accurate.
I don't either. I just know that's what, and that, he was a pretty smart guy, except for some things, but I liked him a lot.
Well, the fellow that I met, Bill, had a nice little hacienda there on the private land just outside of Hatch, and doggone it, if he says, you know, since since the first of the summer, he's killed 23 of these little critters in and around his house. And he says they've never been that prolific, or they just coming around looking for the mice or whatever. But he says I have to keep very close, and he's lost a couple of cats and a couple of dogs from the snake bite. It affects his animals. They get snake bit, they die quickly. So anyway, yeah, just a little bit of historical vignettes there. West of the Pecos, that's where I was. We're in Pecos, so that's kind of cool. And all the while, guess what Kevin's doing? He's sitting there on the beach, soaking in some rays of the sun, sipping a pina colada in the Philippine Islands. Way to go there, Kevin. Oh, golly.
And it monitors.
The breaking news as I was on my travels, of course, is, oh my goodness, Israel declares war. And of course, as you go around, all the people, let's pray for Israel. Israel is so, so important, on and on. And you know, I want to just touch on this, because I wanted to have Edward Hendry back on the show today, but maybe next week. But he wrote a really good article. Again, he's one of his better books that I have in my library is the book called Bloody Zion. And he's not talking about Zion Williamson, the basketball player. No, Bloody Zion is the story of Zionism. Okay. And so I wanted to see what Edward's take on this is. And he never didn't disappoint. If it's okay, I'd like to share the highlights of this, this post he made October 9th, actually. And the title is "The Hamas Attack on Israel is Not What You Think." Subheading, quote, "Hamas acts as agents provocateurs under the control of the Mossad." Now, as always, when you start talking alternative media, which we were relegated to, and the story behind the story is just that. We're going to report on things that are true, are factual, are 100% relevant to today's world, but which, of course, the controlled media will never touch. Why? Because they're controlled by the same tribe of Rodanites. I call them Rodanites, because that's what they are. They're Babylonian merchants. They are not the bloodline. I repeat, not the bloodline of Abraham. The Bible and Book of Revelation says who they are. They are Jews who, quote, say they are Jews but are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. Now, that's not, listen, if it's against the code to quote the Bible, I plead guilty, because that's what the Book of Revelation chapter 3 and chapter 4 declares about the time we live in now, the last days, the last part of the history. The Bible talks about it explicitly. Watch out for these Jews who say they are Jews but are not, but they're all of the synagogue of Satan. Now, folks, if you listen to the show over the last 30 plus years, one central theme comes out. We expose the cockroaches that run around in the dark. And when you shine light on these miscreants, they scurry for the corner. Now, we've reviewed authors and books written on whistleblowers inside the Mossad and the connections to the CIA. I just want to just remind you, the motto of the Israeli Mossad is simply this: by means of deception, thou shalt wage war. Let me repeat that. By means of deception, thou shalt wage war. Everything they do is based on deception, ladies and gentlemen. And you have to understand that. This is what the book that Edward Hendry wrote many years ago, and in the expose on really who was behind 9/11, it's all there, folks. And if you objectively look at the evidence, listen, it's not anti-Semitic. It's not. It's just the plain truth. And as Alex Studer would always say, you know, almost every time he was on the broadcast, truth is hate speech to those who are spreading the lies. That's so true. So absolutely correct. So just never forget what Alex always was. He was clearly unafraid to tell the truth. And he got in a lot of hot water for that towards the end, last part of his life. And anyway. So what is this? The Mossad motto, by means of deception, thou shalt wage war. The first paragraph of Mr. Hendry's well done article, quote, the ADL, Anti-Defense League, and the major news outlets, all major news outlets, of course, are, of course, condemning the attacks by Hamas and claiming that they were caused by anti-Semitism. Indeed, on their website, the Anti-Defamation League, ADL, claims that, quote, extremists, anti-Semites, and conspiracy theorists are flocking to online spaces to cheer for Hamas. And that's true. I mean, you've got some pretty left-wing type of people that are actually, you know, applauding Hamas's attacks and the bloodshed that was caused. Folks, you'll never hear that applauded on this radio show. And I think I talk for Burdock and Mr. Watkins. We do not, and absolutely do not in any way applaud acts of violence or promote those. That's not what this show was ever all about. Telling the truth is what this show is all about, not advocating or applauding violence of any kind. Be that as it may. But here's the second paragraph. Mr. Hendry wrote, quote, but things are not quite what they seem. Again, by means of deception, right? Thou shalt wage war. So let us take a closer look at the so-called anti-Semitism that has allegedly given rise to the Hamas attacks. This may come as a surprise to most, but the fact is that anti-Semitism has a manifold role in the Jewish power scheme of world control. Let that sink in for just a minute. You know, we've got the Hegelian dialectic and all of this put out and put forth by Jewish psychiatrists and plotters and planners. Which is simply, Hegelian dialectic is opposites, okay? You have black and white fighting against each other to have the synthesis. A thesis, an antithesis for a synthesis. In other words, they know what the end result will be. That's what they want. And so they play both sides. That's Hegelian dialectic in a nutshell, ladies and gentlemen. So Mr. Hendry goes on to say, quote, below is an excerpt from his book, Bloody Zion, a book that has been banned by Amazon. Well, there you go, right? The book reveals that the Jewish hierarchy uses anti-Semitism for what? To keep Jews from assimilating into Gentile society. They want their Jews cloistered from the Gentile world. They have historically used anti-Semitism as a means of herding Jews to Israel, their homeland, right? Their ancestral homeland, so to speak. The organization Jews Against Zionism, I mean, did you know there was such an organization, guys? A group called Jews Against Zionism, JAZ, explains how anti-Semitism is used by Zionists to further their ends. There's a gentleman who lived in born in 1860, died in 1904 at age 44, Theodor Herzl. If you've never heard that name, I just suggest you research it objectively. He is the founder of what we call today modern Zionism. And this is, again, Jews themselves writing this. Jews against the Zionism model, which is really, Zionism is absolutely a synonym of world control and domination. World power brokers, folks. That's what Zionism is. It's a political movement. It's not a religion. Okay, so the founder of this is Theodor Herzl. And I quote, this is from Jews Against Zionism, and they write, so Mr. Herzl recognized early on that anti-Semitism would further his cause, which is Zionism, which is world domination, comma, the creation of a separate state for Jews to solve what he called, in late 1800s, the, quote, Jewish question. He maintained, quote, we must, above all, make it, anti-Semitism, an international political issue. We must. Herzl wrote in his diaries on page 19, Herzl wrote that Zionism offered the world, and get this, this is stunning, a welcome, quote, final solution of the Jewish question. Wasn't that Adolf Hitler's words? No, no. It's Theodor Herzl's, folks. On page 19, he also writes, quote, anti-Semites will become our surest friends. Anti-Semitic countries are greatest allies. Let me just repeat the language used by Herzl long before World War II, and even well before World War I, he used the same exact language used by the so-called Nazis, the rise of the Nazis. He described in detail on his, in his diary, the, quote, final solution of the Jewish question. And now I'm quoting from Edward Hendrick again, quote, that language and concept did not originate with the Germans, did not. It originated with Jewish Zionists. Thus, quote, final solution was not to be the extermination of the Jews, as is commonly falsely believed. It was and is the persecution of the Jews in order to drive them out of Europe and into Israel. The Nazis were simply the unwitting tools in the hands of powerful, uber-wealthy Zionist Jews in their Machiavellian plan to gain hegemony over Palestine. All who engage in persecution of the Jews simply because they are Jews are unwitting accessories to the Zionists. Mm-hmm. Herzl further explained in his diary on page 16, quote, this is from Theodor Herzl now, quote, it is essential that the sufferings of Jews become worse, for this will assist in the realization of our plans. Who's our? The international Zionist, international banksters. That's who, folks. Quote, I have an excellent idea, Herzl writes. I shall induce anti-Semites to liquidate Jewish wealth. The anti-Semites will assist us thereby in that they will strengthen the persecution and oppression of all Jews. The anti-Semites shall be our best friends, end quote. Folks, if you don't know anything about, how about the Hegelian dialectic, you just heard it right there. You see, they foster anti-Semitism.
I think you're hitting the nail on the head, Doctor. Zionism is not a religion. It's politics. And And they're using whatever they can to make this happen. And it may be these, did you say Robinite or Rodinite?
Rod, yeah, R-H-A-D.
Like A-Rod or
Rod, R-H.
Like a stick?
No, it's actually spelled Rod, R-H-A-D-A-N-I-T-E-S.
Maybe best we call them by that because, you know, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I know lots of Jewish people that are just fine. My stepdad's Jewish. The thing about it is, you know, he's not a Zionist or whatever that is. He's pretty much like every other American guy out there. You know, so these Zionists are actual, that's like politics and secular. It has nothing to do with religion. And they are this Anti-Defamation League people that are trying to stifle people. And I wouldn't doubt that they have their hands knee deep in this war that's going on over there now.
Yeah, folks. I mean, I for what it's worth, get a hold of Edward Henry's book, Bloody Zion, and the referencing, the footnotes are so, he's researched this fully. Please, it's not being anti-Semitic at all. It's exposing who is really behind the scenes of all this. And again, the Jewish people are not the problem. It's these elitists like Klaus Schwab and Yuval Harari that are the problem. They're just very dark Satan worshipers. That's the bottom line here. So please understand what when we talk about this. Now, in the article, let me just progress on with what Edward wrote. And he's so right on point with this. Again, it's not me per se that's right on. I submit it's Edward Henry's research that's absolutely right on. James, thanks for that. Quote, he writes on, for example, to give you an example of how this works, a guy named Frank Collin was the leader of the National Socialist Party of America, NSPA, a rabid anti-Semite neo-Nazi hate group. Collin created a national furor back in 1977 by organizing a hate-filled march in predominantly Jewish Skokie, Illinois, which resulted in a First Amendment case that went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. In the pleading of this case, it turns out that Collin was actually Jewish. Again, by means of deception, right? His real name, it came out in the court proceedings, was Frank Cohen. Before leading the NSPA, again, the National Socialist Party of America, neo-Nazis, rabid neo-Nazi skinheads, right? He had previously been a member of another neo-Nazi anti-Semitic group called the National Socialist White People's Party, NWPP, formerly the American Nazi Party, ANP. A guy named Leonard Holstein was commander of the ANP's Los Angeles unit. It was uncovered that Holstein was, in fact, Jewish and a rabid sodomite. Isn't that just interesting, guys?
Can you catch rabies from sodomy? Anyway, the Palestinians are Semites, too. So I think you're getting right to the point here that maybe these people are not the same race, and they might not even be human, the ones higher up. You know, they really might not be. But Palestinians and Hebrews are all basically the same race, aren't they?
Well, yeah. In fact, so much of the Palestinians... And I had the pleasure, the privilege, I should say, of going and traveling extensively in the Holy Land in 2014. You know, I got to tell you, the minute we took the flight from LAX all the way into Istanbul, Turkey, where then we got an Israeli plane, Turkish, it was Turkish Air actually, right into Tel Aviv. I got to tell you, my goodness, landing in Istanbul, the Turkish airline, which is a wide body, was incredible. I mean, the hostess, the people I sat with, I struck up a conversation with the Turkish businessman. We talked, and my goodness, the hostesses were so incredible on that really long flight that, I mean, I've never been treated better in any flight ever. We landed.
Turkish delight. I flew on Turkish Airlines before, and they serve Turkish delight, and it's like sweeter than sweet. I don't know what they
Out
of heroin or something. It's so good.
And they, you know, you'd have whatever you wanted. They brought even it doesn't matter if you were first class or a coach. I mean, they just really treated you amazing. So, but we land in Istanbul, and we take the Jewish air. And it's totally different. I mean, it's like the hostesses, which are Jewish, are rude and arrogant. And it's just there was palpable difference. And then we land in Tel Aviv. And then it was like, OK, you're really, you know, you're in a military state as you go through security to the airport. Oh, it's because we're such a persecuted people, all this. And I got to tell you, we were on archaeological digs in the Palestinian sector, in the West Bank area. And, you know, you hear all this in the Western media about how these people just hate everything Western. They hate Americans. It's not safe to go there. You might have your tour bus bombed, for heaven's sakes. But I didn't experience that, guys. In fact, we were on a dig there at the Tomb of the Patriarchs on the West Bank, which is, by the way, where the patriarchs are entombed, right? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And you have the synagogue. There's a synagogue on the left side, and then there is a Muslim, church there on the right side. So we had to go from the one side of the church into the tomb of the patriarchs, go through to the Muslim house. And I got to tell you, as our group of archaeologists team walked through the Jewish synagogue, it was not pretty. We got glared at, we got spit on. Seriously, you know what it's like to be spit on as you walk? What? Yeah, it was not pretty. The baleful looks. How dare you? You know, and you know we're here studying our Tanakh, our Talmud, right? Then we crossed over into the Muslim sector, and I got to tell you, we were greeted with deep reverence and bows, served a sweet coffee. It was amazing, the difference. Please, I'm just being an observer. I'm just observing the way we're treated. I was shocked. And as we, you know, our tour guide, which was Turkish, a Turkish Christian gentleman who spoke the language very well, both Arabic and Israeli. And he just said, okay, as you go into we're going to have to go into this part of the schoolyard, and don't interact with the kids because they can be dangerous. They may throw rocks at you and things like this. So just don't even make eye contact with them. That was his advice to me. Now, listen, I'm 6'7", and I'm a big guy. We had to kind of cut through this fence to get into the dig area, which was right. We had to cut through a part of the schoolyard, this boys' school, right? And we watched these kids anywhere from, I'd say, probably 8 years of age to 14 to maybe 16, you know, that age group, kicking around this what looked like a soccer ball. But keep in mind, their soccer field was solid rock. It was like, imagine trying to play soccer on a blacktop, but it's not. It's just native rock. The rock is everywhere on that West Bank, okay? So this is the most threadbare excuse. It has had all kinds of rubber patches on it, and they're trying to do their best because they're playing football, playing soccer ball, right? Well, these kids come up and they see me, and four or five of them came running up to me and they said, "Bill Walton, Bill Walton." They thought I was the basketball star, Bill Walton. I guess I resemble him a little bit. And they wanted an autograph, believe it or not. They wanted me to sign things. And, you know, they're kids. They're not the enemy. They were just, and I'm looking and I'm sitting there. I picked up their ball and palmed it, and they got a kick out of that. Bill Walton, balls, you know, throwing both the ball. And I played around with them a little bit. They were kids in a not a good situation there. I got to tell you. Well, we went into our archaeological area and did some work. And then as we exited to go back into, we were staying at the Jerusalem Hotel. And I said, we're going to spend the next 2 days in the area, right? And I thought, that's a shame that that is not a soccer ball. So I went down to the local market and I shopped around and bought him a brand new a regulation soccer ball, knowing I'd be going back there at the same time and going to the same area. And so, you know what I did? I took a magic marker and I signed Bill Walton, a.k.a. Dr. Ott, on the soccer ball. Okay? And, you know, we came in through the gate and the kid, Bill Walton! And they came looking for us. And I had a bag, and I had the ball in the bag, and I opened it, and I says, gift for you. And do you know what happened? Did they throw stones at us? Oh, no. These kids melted like I've never seen anything. They just like, they wanted to carry our bags. They wanted to help us. Did everything, you know, carry our, I mean, and they were absolutely just the biggest help. And, you know, come on. They would have fought for us after that simple little gift, right? Well, later in the afternoon, the schoolmaster came over and asked who gave him the ball. And I came over and I says, "Oh, they say you Bill Walton." I said, "No, I'm Dr. Ott." And he laughed. He says, "Yeah, well, you do resemble him." But he says, "Why did you do that? We don't have much money, you know, for much of anything." I said, "That's pretty obvious. The kids' clothes are threadbare. They're kids. They're happy, you know." And I says, "Is that okay? Is that a problem?" He says, he got kind of emotional. He says, "I just want to say thank you, sir." He says, "Nobody's ever done that for us, and this meant a ton to me and the boys. Thank you." He came personally to say thank you. Now, how simple is that, guys? We were there the next day and came in and man, these boys were just lined up to like servants to help us any way they could help us. And then they even brought some of their parents to say thank you, to see the good American. That's like Bill Walton, good American, you know?
Well, I don't think those people are being represented by their government. I have good friends that are Palestinian too, and I've lived with Palestinians in the village Bison before. The nice people, and I have friends that are Jews, and I have friends that live in Israel. It's I don't want either of them shooting at either of them, but I'm sure that kind of thing is happening now. Obviously, that's happening now. And most important, I don't want America to get involved in that. And it looks like we've sent some big ships over there to cause trouble, but we need to stay out of that because we'll just fuel the fire and more people will die and it'll just be more awful than it already is.
Indeed, and I'm not, I agree. I want to go ahead, Kevin. Go ahead.
Yeah, what I was going to chime in on this, and there was a there's a comedian Ryan Long. This guy's funny. We played his video yesterday on the show, and a lot of times when you joke about stuff, you're going to get into the real truth of it. And the whole shtick that he had was he was this paranoid actor, and he was going through this dilemma about. Well, I, you know, the clock's ticking. I need to post on who I support, and I don't know. It's just going like you have to. I'll send you guys a link. It is hilarious. I don't know. Well, maybe I can send it. Let me try to find it. I'm on a phone right now. Well, let's see. We'll see what I can do. But in a synopsis, it's true. And we talked about this right after it happened. I'm like, man. The people are hanging, they're hovering over those emoji buttons because they really need something. And that's what war is about. You saw what happened with Ukraine. Everybody had that flag. I'm still waiting for Musk to or his team to get back to me. It's a legitimate request from the Goldwater. I need data on how, like, I want a graph on Ukrainian emoji usage or, like, now, you know, Israeli flag. Usage or Hamas or, you know, Palestine flag usage. So the thing is like everybody needs to take a look at something and take ownership. They want to take a little piece of something that's really horrific. And then I noticed that Hunter Biden attended a rally for the Jews in Malibu, California. Like, what is that going to do for the Jews, Israel, or, you know, that's this is all about, and it was the same thing with Ukraine. It's just when you see this rollout, you know what's going to happen next. And we're staging an event here. And one of the main problems I see with this problem, that we're going to have terrorist attacks. I mean, there's one that just popped up earlier, and there was a Jewish a shooting a synagogue. And I don't know if that's nonsense or not. I haven't posted it. Do check jiffy.news. That's where you're going to see it first. But this will happen. This is going to happen. And then you're going to have all of this infighting. Nobody was Jewish or Palestinian in the United States. Nobody had any game in the whole thing. That battle's been going on for thousands of years. This is just a way to divide, just like Jim said at the beginning of the show, what divide America in yet another way. And not only that, but certainly distract them. And then in the second hour, I do need to comment on some failures, glaring failures regarding Mossad and their intelligence apparatus, which is also speaking to the United States, all of our intelligence regarding what this is something that is it is astounding that they missed this. It's astounding that they let the, you know, that they staged an event where they did this rave. There's so much to it, true.
Exactly. Anyway, that's what I want to get at.
First part of it.
And flesh this out. Absolutely, Kevin. You're right on point as always. As we get into the final minute of the first hour, I just want to again leave you with this thought. Again, this is quoting Edward Hendry's great article. There was a writing a journalist named Hassan Zarouki in Israel. He's a Jew in Israel. writes this back, clear back in 1987, showing the how Hamas was formed. Get to understand how this is going on. It connects the dots. And he writes, quote, according to the Israeli weekly Kotaret Rashit of October of 1987, quote, the Islamic associations, as well as the university of there in Gaza, had been supported and encouraged by the Israeli military authority, a.k.a. Mossad, in charge of the civilian administration of the West Bank and Gaza. Quote, they, the Islamic associations, which is Hamas, and the university, were authorized to receive large money payments from abroad. And he documents where these money payments are. Rich Israeli, okay, as in House of Rothschild, right? Quote, meanwhile, the members of Fatah, which is the Movement for the National Liberation of Palestine, and the Palestinian Liberation Army, PLO, were subjected to the most brutal form of repressions. Okay? The Islamists, quote, Hamas, right? They set up orphanages and health clinics, as well as a network of schools, workshops, etc., which created employment for women, as well as a system of financial aid for the poor. Back in 1978, they created an Islamic university in Gaza. Quote, the military authority, in this case, Mossad, was convinced that these activities would weaken both the PLO and all leftist organizations in Gaza. And so at the end of 1992, there were 600 mosques in Gaza. Thanks to Israel's intelligence agency, Mossad, Islamists were allowed to reinforce their presence in the occupied territories. There's a reason for that. We'll go to show you why. And I'll tie it all together in the second hour, ladies and gentlemen. This is the story behind the story. I'm your host, Dr. H. Rod, with James Watkins joining us and Kevin, a.k.a. Major Burdock, in the Philippine Islands. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned. Don't go away.
It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on The Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Don't miss the Crypt Rick and Jonathan Show every Saturday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Studio B. Right here at Revolution Radio.
The journey begins to fun, health, and freedom.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreessen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
Oh, yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the second hour of tonight's Story Behind the Store. If you listen to the first hour, hopefully you got your thinking caps on and you're going to be asking yourself, really? Is this factual? Yes, indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not what you think at all. When you see these, again, keep in mind what the CIA director said a few years ago. It says, we'll know that all of our brainwashing techniques have been successful when the American public will believe everything they see on our controlled media as being the truth. You're not asking questions. You're just going like lemmings over the freaking cliff, ladies and gentlemen. Before the break, I was quoting by a journalist named Hassan Zarouki. And I don't have a way to put this on the chat line, but he wrote a paper in 2002, published it in globalresearch.ca. On the 23rd of March, 2004 was published, but he wrote it actually the summer of 2002. Turn back the clock. That's just shortly after the 9/11 problem, right? Who did the attack on the Twin Towers? Edward Henry can tell you, and it's all in the book, that evidence is overwhelming, ladies and gentlemen, who was responsible for that, and the reasons why. But the paper by Mr. Zarouki is simply Hamas is a creation of Mossad. This is back in 2002. Hamas is a creation of Mossad, he writes. And he's quoting this paper in verbatim. I read you before the break the first couple of paragraphs about how this was formed. Hamas was formed in 1978, all the way into 1987. Israeli weekly, newspapers are writing about mosques being the primary Islamic association that's behind the university being formed there, etc. Here is the two paragraphs which are so key in what he wrote in 2002, and I quote: "The Hamas, which is again present since 1977, he shows Hamas launched a carefully timed campaign of attacks against civilians, Jewish civilians? No, ladies and gentlemen, Palestinian civilians. One day before the meeting between Palestinian and Israeli negotiators regarding the formal recognition of Israel by the National Palestinian Council. These planned events, it's just false flag, folks, like BLM attacks, right? These events were largely instrumental in the formation of a right-wing Israeli government following the May 1996 election." You see Hegelian dialectic coming into play here in a powerful way. And then the quote by Mr. Hendry, excuse me. He has this other paragraph by Mr. Zarouki, quote: "The Hamas had built its strength through its various sets of sabotage of the peace process in any way possible. In most ways, all compatible with the interests of the Israeli government. In turn, the latter, Israeli government, sought in a number of ways to prevent the application of what? The Oslo Accords. In other words, Hamas was fulfilling the functions for which it was originally created, and that is to prevent the creation and recognition of a Palestinian state. And in this regard, both Hamas and Ariel Sharon see completely eye to eye, for they are exactly on the same wavelength," end quote. So Edward Hendry finishes up his article with this quote, and I'll let it go at that, and we'll get on to tying this all together, folks. "Hamas acts as agents provocateurs under the control of the Mossad." You heard that right. The Mossad controls Hamas. Hamas and Mossad interchangeable. "The subterfuge of provocation by Hamas justifying a retaliatory response by Israel is exactly the strategy of Israel as explained by Moshe Sherat, the first foreign minister of Israel and prime minister of Israel from 1954 to 1956. Sherat stated that, quote, "Israel must keep a state of mortal tension." I'm sorry, moral tension, end quote. Sharet said that in order to keep that moral tension, it is necessary for Israel to, quote, invent dangers. The invented dangers act as provocations for Israel to retaliate and retaliate and retaliate. Hamas is just such an invented danger. And this is all in keeping with the Mossad motto, which we said in the first hour. Never forget this, ladies and gentlemen. The Mossad motto, quote, "By way of deception, thou shalt wage war." Folks, if you can understand what's really going on, you can see through this nonsense. Kevin, you said it.
And true. That's getting back to the Mossad is one of the most capable intelligence agencies. I mean, they have used so many different ways of everything. But you have to understand with what you just said, they've learned from the past. They've studied everything. And Sun Tzu, the whole warfare is based on deception. That's the oldest concept of what you're talking about comes from, and that, you know, certainly predates Massad.
Certainly. I mean, it's we talked in the first hour about this Mojave Green, the serpent, the snake that camouflages itself, hides away, and inflicts a fatal bite. This is why I was leaning into this whole story. My goodness, these clearly, this is heading into what I, again, fear. I don't want to fear, but I'm concerned this is fulfilling, you know, the plans for the massive World War III. It's all building up. It's not accidental. I want to play this clip. It's quite short, but it goes through the letter from Albert Pike to Mazzini, the high level. Mazzini was in charge of the Vatican's forces of what's called P2 Freemasonry. And, of course, Albert Pike, the Grand Master of Scottish Rite Freemasonry in America. You can listen to this. This is a short clip, but it's really, it's not prophetic because they're getting their marching orders from the demonic realm, ladies and gentlemen. They are literally channeling demonic presences that are wanting to wind up the earth into total and complete one world order control. And that's a fact. Here we go. A message to Israel.
For three world wars. The first world war must be brought about in order to overthrow the czars in Russia and make that country a fortress of atheistic communism.
Okay. This fellow is reading the letter again from Albert Pike to who? Mazzini. And this is after the Civil War in the 1860s. It's prophetic as all get out. He's outlining three world wars that will happen of necessity to bring about the control of Lucifer. This is amazing. Listen to it closely.
The divergences caused by agents of the Illuminati between the British and Germanic empires will be used to foment this war. After the war, communism will be used to destroy other governments and weaken the religions. The Second World War must be fomented by taking advantage of the differences between the fascists and the political Zionists. This war must be brought about so that Nazism is destroyed and political Zionism is strong enough to institute a sovereign state of Israel in Palestine. During the Second World War, international communism must become strong enough to balance Christendom, which would be restrained and held in check until the time when we would need it for the final social cataclysm. The Third World War must be fomented by taking advantage of the differences caused by the agents of the Illuminati between the political Zionists and the leaders of Islam. The war must be conducted in such a way that Islam and political Zionism mutually destroy each other. Meanwhile, the other nations, once more divided on this issue, will be constrained to fight to the point of complete physical, moral, spiritual, and economic exhaustion. We shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, and we shall provoke a formidable social cataclysm, which in all its horror will show clearly to the nations the effect of absolute atheism, origin of savagery, and of the most turmoil. Then everywhere, the citizens, obliged to defend themselves against the world minority of revolutionaries, will exterminate those destroyers of civilization. And the multitude, disillusioned with Christianity, whose deistic spirits will from that moment be without compass or direction, anxious for an ideal, but without knowing where to render its adoration, will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer, brought finally out in the public view. This manifestation will result from the general reactionary movement which will follow the destruction of Christianity and atheism, both conquered and exterminated at the same time. The letter outlines a plan to foment three world wars in an attempt to take over the world. It is claimed that the letter was on display in the British Museum Library until 1977, but the British Museum denies this claim. Some suggest that the use of the word Nazism in 1871 proves that the letter is a fraud, and others say the same about Zionism. But Zionism existed back then. Zionism was made official in the late 1800s as a non-religious nationalist movement arguing that the Bible was proof that Jews had a lawful claim to the land of Palestine, an area that was currently inhabited by a population that has lived there relatively peacefully for centuries. Around the alleged writing of this Albert Pike letter, Jews began immigrating to Palestine with the intention of someday creating a state of Israel, which did not happen until 1948, after World War II and the creation of the United Nations. Albert Pike joined the Fraternal Independent Order of Odd Fellows in 1840. By 1859, he was elected Sovereign Grand Commander of the Scottish Rite's Southern Jurisdiction and remained Sovereign Grand Commander for the rest of his life. He was definitely aware of Zionism, and if this Illuminati plan is true, then his use of the word Nazi is plausible. Either way, the letter is worth a read, and the closer we get to the end game, the more accurate this letter appears to be. Whoever wrote this letter had the vision to see where this is all going. By manipulating our beliefs and emotions, mankind has been herded into these wars like cattle to the slaughter.
So what do you think of that? Is that nailing it on the head? I've commented on this in my books I've written so much, and I can not say it enough, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Albert Pike letter to Mazzini, dated August 15th of the year 1871. Oh, people say, well, he uses Nazism. Can't possibly be. Ladies and gentlemen, Albert Pike in his book Morals and Dogma brags about being visited by angels of light, aka emissaries of Lucifer, the light bearer. He writes, Lucifer, the light bearer, what a strange name to give to the powers of darkness. No, it is he who brings enlightenment and brings light to the world. That's Albert Pike in Morals and Dogma, ladies and gentlemen.
So this is actually Satanism.
Absolutely, without a doubt. You see, that's what we're getting at here. This is Satan's plan. It's not God the Creator's plan. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I know for a fact that they're trying to shut down Christianity all over the place, and even in the United States now. You know, you've got the FBI going after the Catholic Church, and even on my own website, I see people posting. Just a little while ago, I read one, and they're trying to say that the Catholics in America are like neo-Nazis. And I said, you know what? I know that this was probably posted by someone in some three-letter agency that's trying to stir the poop up.
Sure. Again, it goes back to, again, why the division? We said this in the first hour. You said it very well, James. You know, we've got to come together and not be divisive, because if we do that, they won't be able to foment World War III. They need to have the Hegelian divisiveness, and that's what's happening here. Again, I can't emphasize this enough, ladies and gentlemen. This Hamas attack, it's not what it seems. It's agent provocateurs to create the response of Israel going to war to take back the claim. We have the hardliners actually saying, nuke them. Nuke the Palestinians. Use suitcase, small tactical nukes. Lay waste to them. And when you start putting that evil genie out of the bottle, you can't put it back in. Okay? This is insanity, folks. You got to stay. See, what would happen if somebody called a war, guys, and nobody showed up to fight it? That video was so right on. We'd be herded like
sheep.
That's
a great idea.
Like sheep.
That's actually a great idea.
I'm with you on that, Jim.
So, you know, I think this is so apropos, this whole subject matter tonight, guys, because we can grouse about the economy, we can grouse about this or that. At the end of the day, there is a dark, evil, satanic force out to control the people and take away our freedoms, our freedom of speech. You know, like you said many times, James, you may not agree with what I say, but you defend my right to say it. And I say the same thing about you and Kevin. There are things that you have every right to say things that I
can't. But you know what, Doc? We have more in common than we don't have in common, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I hope so. Otherwise, you wouldn't come on the show with me. Hey, and I'm not sitting here wearing a dress and cross-dressing as Thunderlips Ultimate Male. Okay?
Not right now.
Not.
Man, no.
That was a low blow, Kevin.
I'm sorry. I thought it was cross-dipping Friday. Like,
holy mackerel.
I can help it.
Darn,
open,
man.
Open. Hey, I'm 6'7" and 295 pounds. I'm not a good looking woman, okay? Can't be.
That's why it's so funny, Drew, because
miniskirt.
It's true, yeah. You need to go. I mean, just do something for charity or something. We got to see you in drag, Drew.
No. Not going to happen. Hey,
for charity, it's for the kids, for the Jews, or for the Palestinians. Take your pick. I don't know. You know,
how about for both?
No, there is a line that I will. And here's another line. Do you want me to cross another line for you?
Do it.
Okay. The guy that I was the friend I was traveling with in my little motorhome. We had to stop. We had to do some business in Santa Fe. And as we were driving around, you know, he saw a sign. He said, "Oh, I've heard about this. We've got to go see this. It's called Meow Wolf." I said, "What? Is it a restaurant? What? No. It's they have a little snack bar in there, but no, this is a great place to go. We got to go to this." "Oh, really? What is it?" "Well, it's like an unsolved mystery house, like the Winchester Mansion type of thing." And so he says, "There's a $100,000 reward if you solve the puzzle." And I says, "Between you and me, we may be able to crack some things." And I said, "Well, what heck? Sure, let's grab a bite to eat and then go do this." But all the tickets were $49 a piece, and for to go into a mansion. Okay, well, if you say you want to do it, fine. It's an evening entertainment. Well, we went in, and you know what happened there? It devolved into something I mean, cultural shock. Okay, the place was packed. I mean, it's the parking lot's full. It's a big draw. What's going on here? It's kind of cool. And so I went in there. And you know what? We did crack a big part of the puzzle. I was able to figure out, and my friend says, "Well, look at this. It's numerology. And looking at this, you can crack the safe of this physicist who was, the whole story is how to unravel what happened to his son. His son went interdimensional, disappeared, right? So we were able to crack the safe and his. And we opened up, and there's his journals, and ta-da! Well, okay, so we went on the website and said, "This is what happened based on this. Where's our $100,000 bucks? Okay, we basically solved it. We had about a dozen people like clapping, applauding. "How'd you guys open that safe?" One guy says, "I've been coming here for 3 years, off and on, trying to figure out ways to get into the safe, and you guys cracked it." I said, "Well, yeah, it wasn't that difficult." But I think we cracked it. So that was exciting. That part, I enjoyed that. So to exit the house, you got to literally go into a different dimensional time zone. Going in, I mean, here's a picture of me. You walk into the fridge to get out, okay? And you go into this ultra new dimension. Now, I wondered about what was going on because this was adult night only. A lot of times kids come, right? It's a kid-friendly type of thing, too. But this thing I know is it was adult only. And I says, "Why is it adult only? What's going on?" "Well, they can allow you to take alcoholic beverages, adult beverages throughout the thing. Normally you can't do that with the kids there." Okay. No. As I was lined up, there was about, I say, 25 or so people dressed up in animal furry, like little bunny costumes or whatever. I mean, it's like, what, are they having an early Halloween party here, or what's going on with this? No, no. Maybe I need to get out more, guys. And I'm here. I'm a Utah boy, kind of backwoods, and I'm a little redneck west of the Pecos type of guy. I wasn't prepared for what I saw. And again, I'm 6'7", and I don't mind mixing it up. You know, if I'm outraged, I will stand up and mix it up when I need to. Well, so here we are in this kind of a nightclub atmosphere. And there's a the people are sitting around having a good time, drinking, whatever. And I think a couple of people were, you know, doing other things besides alcohol, if you know what I mean. Because it's psychedelic type of atmosphere. And as we're walking down, my friend says, look at this bathroom facility. It was not male and female. It had three icons. I says, three? What's the third one? I mean, what is it, cross-dressing? He says, just go in there and check it out. I walked in and I, what the hell? This is nasty in here. There's a big ass litter box, okay, with human feces and urine in it. I'm saying, what? Well, welcome to the New World Order. These people dressed up were actually what they call furries, and my friend was telling me, I says, get out of town. No. Yes. It's a new wave. People identifying not as male or female or lesbian or you know, whatever, cross-dressing. No. They're actually saying that they're animals. They're dressed up as a furry little squirrel or a rabbit or one guy was a wolf in a wolf costume, for hell's sakes. And these are custom-made outfits with a trapdoor back door to go when they need to go to the bathroom. They don't go and sit on a toilet. They sit in a freaking big kitty litter box. And the establishment thinks that's okay.
It's really real, too. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was not real. I thought if someone was just joking with me. It turns out one of these dudes I was working with was one of them. And I was like, what? So I've been joking and making fun of him and hurting his feelings. I don't feel bad about that.
My companion knew all about the movement, and that's why he kind of wanted to, and he wanted to see my reaction. And he's a very smart man. He is brilliant, and we have some in-depth conversations. But he was like, he was laughing his ever-loving ass off at me. Because I was going through culture shock. I said, you cannot be serious. Okay? Here's a guy that, you know, like I said, I'm 6'7" and about almost 300 pounds. And here's a guy about as tall as me. He looked like Rosie Greer, you know, the football player. He's an African-American gentleman in a big, like, chipmunk suit. And I was watching, and he's waiting to go into the bathroom and use his litter box. Well, I had enough of this. I says, this is not acceptable. I said, listen, I'm going to go
sure,
to the,
maybe you just were, I mean, you would feel more comfortable if you were dressed properly.
No, what are you, Kevin?
Come on. I had a really bad week. Come on.
Rosie Greer was not only a football player, he's also a movie star. He played in a movie called The Timber Tramps.
Yeah, I think he was on Daniel Boone, the series, a few times, too. Right. He's a big, big, you know, muscular. That's what he reminded me of, the facial hair and everything. They have human faces poking out of their furry bodies, okay? So guess what I did? Would you like to know what this redneck from Utah did? I wanted my freaking money back. Sorry, but $49 is a little too much to pay for that culture shock. So and my friend is just, he's like videotaping me with his phone. He's just I says, turn that damn thing off. But I politely went up to the security guard and says, I need to see your upper management on this. Why? You have a problem? I says, I don't want to talk to you about it. I want to talk to who's ever in charge. So and here's this woman. I think it was a woman. It looked awful, almost like Thunderlips the Man, with the pink hair and a big nose ring and talking with something in the tongue. And I says, he says, what's the problem? You have an incident? I said, no, what's the matter with you people? These furry critters should be locked up in a psychiatric ward. You just don't go around defecating and making a stink in a big damn litter box. I want my money back. I know I was never warned about this, and it's nonsense, and I'm just waging a protest. Guess what the response was? Would you like to guess? And don't say I didn't have my costume tight enough, okay?
No, I was trying to come up with something more clever, but I couldn't. I'm saying they refused.
Well, they brought in two big security guards and began to lecture me on my intolerance. I should be ashamed for being such an intolerant SOB. And I looked at him, I said, no. Crazy is flat out crazy, any way you slice it. I think you need to leave.
And you kind of know it when you see it.
So the bouncers basically escorted me and my friend out the door and said, don't come back. That was our response.
I'd go back. I mean, I wouldn't accept that. But I'd go back after hours and plant some cameras in their offices. I'd bring a lockpicking lawyer with me. And
you want a camera in the litter box, bro? Did you say?
Sure, everywhere.
For that.
But also audio about them laughing about what a con it is, and then it'll be funny enough for them, and they'll say, "Hey, listen, there is no prize. Somebody's going to joke about the fact that what a bunch of idiots paying $50 and there is no prize." And then what I'd do is hit them with $200,000 with my lawyer.
Ooh. Well, I got to tell you, we had an appointment the next morning. This was this event, this Meow Wolf event happened Thursday night. So the next morning, and We're driving to find a place to park the motorhome and sleep it off, right? And I'm still in shock. And you know what shocked me even worse is my sweetheart wife. I had to call her and tell her about the experience I had in the real world. And I thought my wife, she's a sweetheart. I think she's pretty naive, but I was telling her when that went down, and she says, "Oh, I know all about that. We have an incident with my grandson in his school. One of his little classmates identifies as a chipmunk or something, and she has to have her own private litter box." I was like, "What did you? What?"
You're right about this. Sure, this is a mental health issue. Well, first of all, it's an OSHA issue if you're in a workplace, and I think that there should be something similar in school districts. So you're talking federally funded, right? I mean, like a public school.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I would address it as a health issue, and then certainly if people don't realize that it's a psychiatric issue, then that's their problem. We need to go to the next school board meeting without FBI agents following us and play the video. What you need to do is get a hold of O'Keefe Media Group. This guy, I'm telling you, we've talked about him before, James O'Keefe. I'm sure you know what was Project Veritas, now defunct without him. What a great patriot this guy is. And the balls, okay? This guy is... He has the nerve. He's able to, there's something in his head that irks him so much, he's going to cross that line and he's going to stay there until somebody tells him. And that line moves forward for other people because he did it before. And then, of course, they kick in his door, you know, what pre-dawn raid. This is something that and he's talking about things that are going on over in Israel right now, which is really fascinating. He had, if you look over what is being broadcast on YouTube, and I highly recommend that you just go directly to O'Keefe Media Group, don't know his domain, just type it in, or Rumble, and you'll see everything that he does. That is a way forward. That's a shining light, because people don't read anymore. I've learned that. And they want to see salacious video, and you could work for months or years just to get a 15-second clip of somebody at Pfizer admitting what they actually did, or somebody that is aware of what happened. You know, like, for example, why the hell did they put I just looked at this. I didn't realize how close this rave was to the Gaza Strip, and I put that in private comm. I'll send you guys this later, but it's 3 miles. They chose a place 3 miles directly, like, center. Gaza Strip is the very south part on the coast of Israel, and it's this strip of land, and it's, you know, there's always been problems there, and you're going to do a rave with, for example, all of the things that Muslims are offended by. Women that are scantily dressed, their hair isn't covered, loud music, alcohol, drugs, and you're going to blast that music. And I don't know if you've ever been to, well, you've been to furry stuff, so I mean, I don't know where you've been, but hey, that music is really loud. I mean, it's loud enough. That'll go. You'll hear that bass for 3 miles. You certainly will. And why would Supernova, which is, those are the people that put on the event, why would, out of all the places that you're going to put on, you know, well, even southern Israel, why would you do it right there? That is, it's almost like they were taunting them. It really is. And the fact that Mossad wasn't aware of it, the fact that, man, you know, and a lot of important people's kids got abducted and raped and murdered there. Something else is going on. Absolutely. Really. Yeah.
False flag all the way. Yeah, that's the whole point of this. Where is this world coming to where suddenly it's you're accused of being intolerant because you see human feces and urine in a big litter box in a public bathroom? What, has the world lost its freaking mind, guys? I mean, completely. And my friend laughs and thinks it's funny. I says, it's not funny anymore. We've got to stop this insanity before we won't exist as human beings anymore. We'll all be little furry creatures without a brain. We've all had chemical lobotomies, it appears like. What in the hell is going on? And they want you to say you're being intolerant and make you feel like you're the problem? Uh-uh. No. This is one line I will not cross, guys. And
it's true. You need to take one for the team, and the next time it happens, show up. And, I know Mrs. True is probably going to be like, you're going to have to explain a few things, but she's going to need to explain a few things like, well, we need to find some bigger stockings. Okay. I mean,
okay, I'll make a deal with you, Mr. Smart guy. You come over from the Philippines. You can dress up whatever you want as a coconut or a Filipino fisherman. I don't care. And I will dress up. Remember that Sam the Eagle character in the Muppets?
Refresh my memory. Yeah. Describe.
He's the big eagle, and he's standing for everything right. And the Muppets, he's just so serious, right?
I'll so this is great. True. You found, like, really, this is the first step for you finding your true identity. I'm glad to hear this. This is a great step. Let's work through it.
Are you my therapist now? You creepo.
No, but I mean, my point is, like,
it's going to be legitimized.
Well, I'm
against a politician.
No. Sam the Eagle's a big guy. I can get away with being Sam the Eagle, but I don't know. Jim, you want to come as Miss Piggy or Kermit?
I used to have a piggery.
The whole point is,
and you know, I had a lot of breeding sows. They were actually. You start to like understand that pigs are smart. The young ones that they butcher are not smart really, but the older ones, yeah. They start having personalities.
The point I was trying to make is that they'd probably give you your money back if you were wearing a dress.
Oh.
That's my point.
Okay. Well, no, I'm not wearing a dress.
So
okay. I'll wear the Sam the Eagle costume. Okay.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that in every situation, like, we've all got bug out kits, right? People in my world, we have a bug out kit. Which includes guns and ammo, and you need to have medical supplies and a certain amount of food and different types of, like, what weight you can carry and where you're going and who you're going to call and who are the people that you can call to help you, letting know that all hell's breaking loose. This is an opportunity. What you've described, true, means that, and they're probably pretty light. So, I mean, the stockings, the problem is the shoes. Okay. The shoes, you're going to have to, that's going to be a pain. They take up a lot of room, but you might find yourself in a situation where putting on a dress is your only way to get that $50, or maybe, who knows, 3 months from now, somebody from executing you.
I mean, if I wear a dress, I won't get executed.
Probably, yeah. I mean, if they're going door to door and they've got some freak, weird amalgamation of, Hamas, but leave alone the trannies, because that definitely would happen in the United States. You get carte blanche. If you're a transvestite, you get carte blanche. And so that's the weirdest perversion, because it wasn't too long ago that they were throwing those people off of buildings.
I'd rather go off the building.
Okay. All right.
We'll be
not in a dress, right?
No, I'll be dressed as Sam the Eagle and see if I can fly.
Okay. Right.
So I just sent you guys in the chat room. Happy President's Day from Sam the Eagle. Okay. So you can watch and see that's. That's me. I fit Sam. I'm a little blue Sam Eagle, and I'll even come. You know what? I'll tell you what. I will put a bunch of hard-boiled eggs in my crotch. Okay, instead of laying, human turds in a litter box, I'll go lay some eggs in the litter box. How does that sound?
That's another fetish, by the way. They will put the eggs up the into the rectum. And then they will go around and squat and lay eggs.
Oh, don't even. Oh, no.
Real.
No.
Real.
I can verify that. I can verify that. I was going to jump in, but thank you, Jim, for saving me.
I'm just full of interesting trivia.
Yeah, well, nowhere is safe, Drew. Nowhere. Nowhere.
So, but that means I can get away with the eggs. I can be a real slim minority then.
People are going to come and think that you're part of their group.
I'll get some hard-boiled freaking ostrich eggs, some ostrich eggs, some big eggs. How about that?
Well, maybe you should honeypot them. I don't know.
Oh my gosh!
I love ostrich eggs. I like to boil them and then I slice them like steaks.
Really?
Yeah, they're actually nice, and then you serve it with like a steak. It's high protein, but they taste good. They taste like chicken eggs, only bigger.
Well, I bet eggs are eggs. I mean, how about hummingbird eggs? It needs quite a few of those to make a. Have you ever seen a hummingbird egg?
No, maybe I would. I don't. I wouldn't know what it would look. Do where do they? Where do they have time to sit on an egg?
Well, they do. They have their little nests. They're hidden away. I found one time, and these are they're so tiny, beautiful little eggs. Because the hummingbirds are birds. They hatch. They don't just magically appear from fairy show.
You guys, okay, you know how they made a turducken, right? Where you took a little tiny bird and then you put it in a bigger bird, a turducken. You know, you've got, well, what about, there's got to be a way to put an egg inside of an egg, kind of like the Russian dolls. Egg inside of an egg. Yeah, there's got to be a way to do that. Start with a hummingbird egg, and then, I don't know, where do we go? Dove? No, dove are pretty big.
Yeah, sparrow.
You have a smaller, but like 15 eggs, and serve it to some idiot in New York that's willing to pay $12,000 for it.
You always got an angle, don't you, Kevin?
Always got an angle.
Another little interesting factoid: hummingbird being the smallest of the bird genre, I think there's like only a 2 week gestation period, but it's all multiples of 7 days. You realize that ostriches being the biggest, they have to sit on their egg to hatch it. I don't know 52 or something. It's quite a long gestation for an ostrich egg. Which gives you, means that if you want to get an ostrich egg in the 30th week, you might have some real good protein in there, Jim. You can slice that up really thin, and you might have a beak or two to chew up. I don't know.
Ooh. Oh, just for fun, put when you get to balut. You ever had balut, Drew?
No.
It's almost fully mature. You get some feathers here.
I bet it tastes like chicken.
It's actually really not that good. It tastes like kind of a dead baby duck corpse.
Do they hard boil that or how do we devolve from talking about
things? If they're fresh, they're okay. But I mean, sometimes they'll boil them and then reboil them later, and that's no good. That's gross.
In fact, actually, you should be eating them raw. They sell them and they color them, so you know which ones are fresh eggs and which ones are balut. And they sell them everywhere. They're everywhere. Doctors actually tell you to, if you've got certain ailments, that just eat balut.
I thought we'd had such high hopes for having a meaningful show tonight.
Oh, come on.
I'm enjoying our conversation tonight more than
I don't know about our listeners. They probably are just like, that's it. I'm banning Dr. Ott off the airways. He is intolerant. He doesn't like furry little creatures. Well, I do. I like salmon
wear
eagle.
A dress.
I'm not going to wear a dress.
Okay, guys, important behind the scenes info just came in from the fan on my private chat. Spitfire 1592 says that there really are politicians that are furries already. I was joking. And he says that in the Obama's White House, John Podesta and Valerie Jarrett were furries. Are furries?
Now, what would John Podesta be a furry of? A skunk? Skunk may be apropos for ferret face. No, Fauci is a ferret. A furry ferret. He's ferret face Fauci. Can I get sued for saying that? Or is this satire?
Probably. Suing takes so many years now. So, I mean, you'll be gone. Don't worry about it.
I think Podesta would be a good skunk. And how about the other one being the badger? How about that?
Badger.
Who is Valerie Jarrett, though? I'm not familiar.
Ferret play.
Yeah.
Pulls off the really well, doesn't it? Ferret play. It's intriguing, isn't it, when you hear that word? Hey, are you into ferret play?
Oh.
You have to get them descented if you want to play with a ferret. They're stinky.
Don't even go there, or they'll have mating litter boxes next. I mean, right there in the public domain.
Well, that's San Francisco. Well,
that's how you got to get rid of them, is because it's not sanitary. So you're going to have flushable litter boxes. And they basically have that in Asia. They have these squatty toilets that you squat over and they flush. So why can't the furries use those? Because that's at least the sanitary.
Just a couple short years ago, people in Washington State were carting off, taping off completely good public restrooms, brand new restrooms, saying they were contagion centers for COVID-19. And wait a minute, have they ever heard of Lysol spray and cleaning a toilet? I mean, but they allow furry litter boxes? Talk about contagion centers. I don't know.
No, it's all about whatever gets marketing, and there's clearly what we're experiencing right now is the upper echelon of marketing has been taken over. People have said, okay, well, now we control the apparatus to get to 80% of the people, and get to means like to have that connection, whether it's on their cell phone or social media or on the TV or whatever. And they have that option. They can sway. They can dial things in and out, no problem whatsoever. People that go, like, for example, at Goldwater, you're talking about like 1% of the population in the United States has ever been there or has seen something from the Goldwater. And in order to get higher, it's practically impossible. I mean, because they'll just shut you down. They'll threaten you. And not only that, but they're doing router level things where, oh, well, that video is not available, even though it's not even on a network. I've posted things that just have the Goldwater, and I've tested stuff from different countries all around the world and posted it on different accounts and totally unassociated with the Goldwater or 8chan or, you know, Acoon, or Jiffy.news. And it is throttled way down. That's not an excuse. It's not an excuse because when it gets into certain areas, when other people get it, they find that they're getting suppressed. So when somebody actually does see it, they'll post it to their people and like, this is insane. This is incredibly good news. This is a great analysis, or here's even great video. Doesn't have anything to do with me or my thoughts. I've got good video of something timely, and that is absolutely suppressed, and those people get tagged. And so it just goes on and on and on. We're talking about a router level problem here, and the one person that nobody's talking about, and look at his mention, he's pretty smart, he's doing pretty well, Jeff Bezos. Bezos is responsible for this router level suppression of the news that we're discussing right now. Because he owns 80% of the internet infrastructure worldwide. Now, I know your opinion on Elon Musk, but you can't have a bad opinion on him after I just told you what's going on with Bezos, because at least we have a second option.
Well, and that's
what he did. What he did for the Philippines was great. You've got another 8,000 islands that will be able to get to the internet, whether it's censored or not. I'm sure it will be.
Well, I'll tell you this in closing. You know, the God I worship can use evil men to do a good job. So I'm not going to judge that. But listen to me. As we get out. Okay, we have Polecat Podesta. What's your furry that you identify with? What would you be there, Kevin? What furry creature? I'm Sam the Eagle, the blue eagle.
I don't know. I ran into a furry, and LP knows, and I know he's listening. The guy and I had a meeting, and this dude showed up in public with a real wolf's head. And I thought it was funny. I mean, because we play jokes on each other all the time. We got a great sense of humor. I didn't really take it like, man, that's cool to like walk into a place and go to a serious business meeting with a wolf on your head. And it was real wolf. This guy spent a huge amount of money on it. And he didn't take it off and didn't speak, and you know, and I started petting him, and you know,
I would suggest you would be good in a fox costume. You're Br'er Fox. And can I suggest, I think Jim would be Mr. Beaver. Leave it to the Beaver.
I'll go ahead.
Leave it to the Beaver. You can slap that tail and everything else.
And we'll make you the giraffe.
Well, I look like a marsupial in real life, but
in kangaroo, that's a good one. What will you have in your pouch? A joey or something else?
Only the females have pouches.
Oh
no, I have a 1911.
There you go. That's what I was saying. That would work. Okay, you land down under the Philippines. Hey, we're almost out of time, guys.
Do they have kangaroos in the Philippines?
No, but they got to come from somewhere. We're out of time, guys. Thanks again. It was fun. Stay away. Lock your doors. There's furry creatures out there, and they vote Democrat. Be well, ladies and gentlemen. Till next week. Dr. Ott signing off. Be well.
Listening to Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
And no, of course.